Tonight, I'm going to talk about the power of perspective. What is your perspective? Do you have the right perspective? Do you have a perspective that is in line with reality? Are you seeing things as they actually are? Are you seeing things that are true? Or are you seeing things in a twisted, in a untrue perspective that is leading you to choose to do the wrong things? And we see here a powerful example of how your perspective can change everything. From the perspective of the attendant of the man of God, he says, all is lost. We're surrounded, we're outnumbered, there's nothing we can do. But Elisha says, open your eyes. He prays to God to open his eyes, and God does open his eyes, and the man sees, oh, things aren't as I thought they were. Actually, we are at the advantage. We're not at the disadvantage. We are with the advantage. We have more than they have. We have more power than they have. And so Elisha, one single man, leads about a whole army with the help of God. This is because his perspective was enlightened, and he could see that my situation is not quite as simple as the surface may suggest. And we, as we're here in this world, as we're faced with problems, as we're faced with difficulties, as we're faced with sadness and sorrow, need to have the proper perspective so that we don't get disheartened. So we don't be like that attendant of Elisha and say, all is lost. There's no hope for me, all is lost, and there's nothing we can do about it. No, we need to recognize that God is in control, that those who are for us are greater than those who are against us, if we are on God's side, that is. If and only if we are on God's side. And it can be difficult sometimes to stay focused on that. It can be difficult to have that in the forefront of our minds. Why is that? Because there are difficulties in life. There are things that are very challenging. There are things that make us wonder, what in the world's going on here? Why is this happening? Why is this happening to me? Why am I suffering this way? Why is are all these bad things occurring to me? But what we always have to remember is, am I looking at this through the right perspective? Am I seeing things as God sees them, or am I seeing things in my limited view? And it's difficult because we are limited. The attendant of the man of God would not have seen things unless a miracle occurred. He would not have seen things as they are unless God opened his eyes. So the question is, has God opened our eyes so that we can see beyond the superficial? That we can see beyond the physical? Can we see spiritual things? Can we think, as Paul talks about, do we only see carnal things or do we see spiritual things as well? It's a problem if we're only seeing the superficial. It's a problem if we're only seeing the carnal. We will surely become discouraged. We will surely become distraught. And we will surely lose our way because we just have to ask, why is this happening? This doesn't seem fair. And I thought all of this happened, all was going to a certain place, and it turned out that I went through the wilderness instead of straight to Canaan land, and now I'm distraught. Now I'm downcast. Now I'm wondering. Now I want to go back to Egypt. Speaking of perspective, I taught the 2 Kings class a couple weeks ago, and I talked about 2 Kings 4, and I don't know if I should name names here, but Lakita came up to me afterwards and gave me a perspective that I'd never thought about. In chapter 4, you have this woman. Verse 1, now a certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets cried out to Elisha, your servant, my husband, is dead. And you know that your servant feared the Lord. Now let's stop right there. You might say, why did this happen to me? Why was I left alone with nothing? And he died, and I was left here with nothing. He was a servant of God. Why is that? And you know that your servant feared the Lord, and the creditor has come to take my two children to be his slaves. What would you ask? Okay, this doesn't seem right. How is this happening to me? I thought, you know, somebody told me everything was going to be fine. Everything was going to be great. Why is this happening to me? Elisha said to her, "What shall I do for you? Tell me, what do you have in the house?" And she answered, "Your maidservant has nothing in the house except a jar of oil." Now, this is what Lakita mentioned to me. Can you imagine if somebody said, "What do you have in your house?" What could you tell them? "Well, I got this room full of junk. I've got this closet full of junk. I've got this refrigerator and the freezer and the garage, and I've got all this stuff. And it'll take me a little while to get it all out to you, but I can do it. I've got to go through a lot of stuff." Can you imagine saying, "The only thing I have is a little jar of oil"? You talk about being destitute. Talk about being poor. This woman is below the poverty level. And she said, "Your maidservant has nothing in the house except a jar of oil." Then he said, "Go, borrow vessels at large for yourself from all your neighbors, even empty vessels. Do not get a few. Get as many as you can, and the Lord will provide for you." Now, I just bring this up to talk about our perspective. Do you ever think, "Man, I'm poor. Man, I don't have anything"? We have that song, "Count Your Many Blessings." It could be a lot worse. This woman was truly poor. This woman was truly destitute. This woman was in a horrible situation. Imagine the stress. Your husband dies, you have no support, and the creditors come and say, "We're going to take your kids." What a life. Now, the perspective of most people would be, "God has abandoned me. God has abandoned me, and why am I being treated so poorly?" But we see in this situation that God does take care of this woman. God does provide for this woman. We have to have the perspective that, one, we don't expect to have the creme de la creme in this life. That is a false expectation. I'm going to have the finest things. I'm never going to have any trouble. You know, maybe Paul was hungry. Maybe Paul was homeless. Maybe Paul had all these problems. But maybe Jesus had all those problems. He didn't have anywhere to lay his head. But I'm going to have the best of the best. It's only fitting for someone such as I. No, we are not promised any of that. We have to have the expectation that God will provide, but it might not be to our liking. We might not be living to the standards that we would like. We might have more sickness than we would like. We might have more sorrow than we would like. However, God will provide. And you say, "Well, isn't everything about this life anyway?" No, that is completely the wrong perspective. That is completely the wrong perspective. This is just a passing dream, we're camping in Canaan land. This is a temporary state. Our focus is on the future. Our focus is on the eternal. Our focus is not here. Our focus is not the tent, rather the house that is in heaven, the room that Jesus prepared for us in John chapter 14. Okay, but your perspective will change a lot. Your expectations will change a lot. If you go to a hotel and you think, "Okay, I'm going to book this hotel, and it's 3 stars. It's a 3-star hotel. Okay? If I thought it was a 1-star hotel and I was expecting a 1-star hotel, would I be happy with 3 stars? Yeah, I'd be pretty happy. If I was expecting 2, would I be happy with 3? Yeah, I'd be pretty happy. If I was expecting 4, I would say, "What a dump." Notice, the same hotel, but depending on my expectations, my attitude shifts. I'm expecting 1, I go to a 3-star, I say, "Wow, this is f- fantastic. I'm expecting a 5-star, I go to a 3-star, I say, what is this? Who should live like this? Your perspective changes everything. Nothing is in a vacuum. And the right perspective will direct you in how you think about things and how you act. As an example of that, let's go over to Lamentations chapter 3. Lamentations chapter 3. And, you know, as you're turning over there, the perspective, expectations are so important in almost everything. If you get a job and you have the expectation, this is just going to be joy day after day, and when reality hits, you're shaken to the core, and you say, wow, I've got to quit this job. Well, the problem may have been your expectations. You get married and say, there's never going to be any problems. That's bad expectations. Because when problems arise, then you say, well, I wasn't expecting this. I wasn't expecting this. Now I've got to, this isn't how things ought to be. My expectations were unrealistic. Now I've got to pivot. The same thing, I mean, something as simple as, learning a language. If you have the expectations, like a lot of Americans do, that is almost impossible to learn a language. When difficulties arise, you'll say, well, that's just a nice off-ramp to say, oh, well, it's impossible anyway. That's not the right expectation. You look at things, try to look at them as honestly as possible, get as close to the truth as possible. And when I look at like learning a language, I say, well, I just look at simple data. People along the border seem to be able to learn it. Does that mean they're smarter? Probably not. That doesn't seem like a good assumption. Luxembourg, the average person speaks 4 languages. Are they just all geniuses? No. And then, you know, languages are designed for smart people to talk to dumb people, old people to talk to young people. They should be easy to learn. This takes a lot of time. It's not intelligence limited. I base it on the facts. And my expectation changes my behavior. When I get frustrated, I say, I don't say, oh, well, I'll do something else. I'll say, oh, well, it's going to take a little more time. A little more time. And I'm going to keep going. Why? Because my expectations are realistic. I'm not going to learn it overnight, but I will learn it. Okay, in Lamentations chapter 3, a beautiful chapter, a chapter I think we go over quite a bit for good reason. Jeremiah, the author is anonymous, but everyone thinks it's Jeremiah. Jeremiah here is talking about the calamity that has come upon him, the calamity that has come upon Jerusalem. And in verse 19 of Lamentations chapter 3, remember my affliction and my wandering, the wormwood and bitterness, surely my soul remembers and is bowed down within in me. This I recall to my mind, therefore I have hope. Now, before this, he's talked about how he has forgotten to be happy. How he doesn't even know what happiness is anymore. And notice nothing changes. Jerusalem is still destroyed. People he knows are still dead. People are still wanting bread. People are still destitute. Nothing has changed. What changes? Jeremiah changes. His perspective changes. Verse 20, surely my soul remembers and is bowed down within me. This I recall to my mind, therefore I have hope. The Lord's loving kindness indeed never cease. For his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore, I have hope in him. The Lord is good to those who wait for him. Notice that. Those who wait for him. It's not going to be immediate. It's not going to be instant gratification. But the Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the person who seeks him. It is good for that he waits silently for the salvation of the Lord. Now, that's a perspective most people don't share. I want what I want, and I want it now. And you could say, well, that's just this current generation. No, I think that's pretty much all people throughout time. Most people want what they want. And if they have the chance to get it, they're going to take it. It is good for a man that he should bear the yoke in his youth. Again, that would not be a common idea. Why is it good for someone to bear the yoke in their youth? It teaches you. It prepares you. It helps you to develop. Let him sit alone and be silent, since he has laid it on him. God has laid it on him. Let him put his mouth in the dust. Perhaps there is hope. So instead of exalting yourself, you humble yourself, you submit yourself, and you wait on God. Let him give his cheek to the smiter. Let him be filled with reproach. Humble. A humble person, for the Lord will not reject forever. For if he causes grief, then he will have compassion according to his abundant loving kindness. So I'm going to have the perspective that even through the suffering and pain of this life, God still cares. That God is still there. That God is watching over me. That God has a plan. That all this pain and suffering is not just randomly happening and we're just spinning off to nowhere. No, there is a plan. We are in the hollow of God's hand. All right, coming toward the end here, let's turn over to 1 Peter. Chapter 4. First Peter chapter 4, verse 12. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 12. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fire ordeal among you, which comes upon you for your testing, as though some strange thing were happening to you. But to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing, so that also at the revelation of his glory you may rejoice with exultation. If you are reviled for the name of Christ, you are blessed, because the Spirit of glory and of God rest upon you. So this is obviously a perspective transformation. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fire ordeal among you. That is, when you're suffering, when you're facing hardship, don't think that that is above you. Don't think you are beyond that. Don't think that you are supposed to be walled off from this. No, even Christ suffered. You are going to suffer as well. Don't be surprised by it, which comes upon you for your testing, so that you would develop, so that you would grow, so that you would become more and more like Jesus. And you might say, again, how does that make sense? Well, if your perspective is that this life is the prominent, then it makes no sense. But if your perspective is that the next life is the prominent, it makes complete sense. And so your perspective matters a lot. You have to have the right eyes, the right perspective, the right way of thinking about things. This is not focused on this life. This is focused on eternal life. But to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing. You should be happy about this. Why? You're developing, and this is going in to the eternal. This is what really counts. Your life is not about enjoying empty things in this life, and your life is not about just living a boring life until you die. No, You need to be developing, pushing, and striving to enter in. Keep on rejoicing so that also at the revelation of his glory you might rejoice with exultation. And so, our focus is not earthward bound, but it is heaven bound. And all the things that happen on earth, what's Paul say? These passing light afflictions cannot compare with the weight of glory, of eternal life. That is what we're focused on. That is what we're pushing toward. If we have the proper perspective, if we see things the way God sees things and not the way that the people around us see things. Speaking of that, you can think of many events that people would have differing perspectives on. In fact, you know, something happens in the world, you listen to one channel, they have this perspective, this other channel has this perspective, and they have the same facts, but they have completely different perspectives on the same thing. That's common. But if we think of the Bible, there's some events that we can see that different groups have completely different perspectives on. In fact, what's the principal event in the Bible? I would guess it would be the crucifixion. The crucifixion probably seems to be the principal event in the Bible. You could argue the resurrection or whatever, but how did people see the crucifixion? When Jesus was hanging on that cross, what did that look like to people? I would say that looked like utter defeat. What did his disciples say? We thought he was going to be the Savior. We thought he was going to be the Christ, but it turns out he was killed like a criminal. So they look at Jesus bloodied, hanging on that cross, and their perspective is utter defeat. But what was the true perspective of that? What was actually going on there? Well, what does Paul say in 1 Corinthians 15? Death has been swallowed up in victory. It wasn't utter defeat, it was utter victory. Death had been conquered. Jesus had done what he came to do, conquering death and bringing salvation to the whole world. So this one event shows us how your perspective can change everything. You're looking at it from a human perspective. You say, that guy died, and he died for nothing, and he died like a criminal, and that's the end. But from God's perspective, from the true perspective, we would say, no, that's not the end. That's the beginning of life eternal for all those that follow him. One has a carnal idea that is driving it, and the other has a spiritual. We have to have, as Paul says, we walk by faith and not by sight. We're not bound. We're not contained by this world. We see outside of the superficial, outside of the physical, outside of the carnal. We see to the best of our abilities, and we develop these skills, but we see to the supernatural. And again, like I say, it's not easy all the time. When something horrible happens to you, when something horrible happens to someone you love, when some sickness, some death, this destroys your world, it's a little harder to say, well, all of this has a purpose and I'm in the hollow of God's hand. But we have to see as God sees and see beyond this world and know that he is in control and know that what we see with our eyes is not all there is. Let's end in Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12, we're just going to read a couple of verses from there and then we'll be done. Hebrews chapter 12. We'll start in verse 1. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1. Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us lay aside every encumbrance and sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. We need to have the same perspective that Jesus did. He despised the shame. That is, he thought little of the shame. The shame, the same thing that Paul says. These passing light afflictions can't compare with the weight of glory. This shame can't compare with the glory that is to come. For who, for the joy set before him, you might say, well, that's easy for Jesus. He had glory set before him. But the question is, don't we have glory set before us? Well, of course. Are we willing to endure to reach that glory is the question. Despising the shame, thinking little of the shame, like Paul, like Jesus. This shame cannot compare with what God has in store for me. He sat down at the right hand of the throne of God, and consider him who endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Was Jesus treated unfairly? Was Jesus' life just peaches and cream? No, it was a difficult life filled with all kinds of injustices, filled with all kinds of sorrows. And what did he do? He pushed through. He endured until the end. Why is that? He had the end. He had the goal in view. What's it say? Fixing our eyes. Don't let your eyes wander off of the goal. Verse 2, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith. We need to follow his footsteps. We need to do as he did. We need to have the same attitude as he had. We have to have the same perspective as he has. Not looking at the temporal, but the eternal. Not looking at the carnal, but the spiritual. We need to be able to rise above the superficial and see things. And even when tragedy strikes, and it will strike if it hasn't already many times, if it hasn't recently, tragedy will strike. And you'll be given choices. Do I just spiral off into unfaithfulness? Do I spiral off into doubt? Or do I say, no, I'm going to entrust myself into the all-powerful hand of God? When everything is collapsing around you, when you're sick, when people you love are sick, what are you going to do? Are you going to trust and obey? Or are you going to say, I'm having second thoughts about all this. I think I might have other ideas now. No, we have to endure knowing that God has control, knowing that even though we might suffer, even though we might have all kinds of difficulties, we shouldn't think it a strange thing. We manage our expectations. Jesus suffered, Paul suffered, all the apostles suffered, all the prophets suffered. Why are we above it? That woman that Elisha goes to, I don't envy that life at all. Horrible. Why am I, Elisha wants to die, he says, let me die. I'm no better than my fathers. Why do I think I'm better than her? Why do I think that I'm better than the apostles? Suffering is below me. No, I might have to deal with my share of suffering. Okay, so what am I going to do in response to that? That's the question. Well, I have to have the right perspective. I have to say, as Jesus was getting ready to suffer on the cross, what did he say? Not mine, but thy will be done. Now, that's a lot harder to do when tragedy is at the door. When everything's going good, then yeah, I'll say that. But when tragedy is at the door, to say that can be a little scary. Because what if God's will is throws me into a sorrow that is almost unspeakable? Well, that's true faith, to say, even when you're looking at something that could crush you, to say, not mine, but thy will be done. And of course, Jesus was looking at an excruciating, from the cross, excruciating pain and death. So for us, the I hope the message is clear, but as clear as it is, it's difficult to follow. You have to despise the shame, despise the suffering, that is to not put too much weight to the shame, not put too much weight to the suffering, and go on following God, whatever it cost, until the end, knowing that he will reward his servants. And if you can do that, and if God helps you to do that, if you're faithful to him, he will help you, you will be rewarded eternally. And that's what drives us on. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross. Can we not endure the hardships of this world for the joy set before us? Well, we have to. We have to follow the steps of the Master. We have to have the same attitude as he had, and we have to endure till the end if we want to be with him in heaven. If anyone has any